answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I need each and every one of you to get out, everybody, you get out, just get out and vote. You got to bring your friend. You know, we say plus 10, so plus 10 or plus 2 or plus 20, but bring them all out because we have to set the stage for November. We have the most corrupt, most incompetent president in the history of our country. He's destroying our country, and we have to get it done quickly. We have to get it done quickly.
Yes, we do, and it's underway right now, and that is the Iowa caucus. Now, the key here is not so much that Trump's going to win, but by how much. Because I'm telling you, if he falls anywhere near 40% or less, they're going to immediately say, he's not going to make it, can't pull it. The latest numbers are showing that he is at 48% minimum. He may or may not breach the 50%. But it means that at this point, he's a runaway with this election, with this caucus, I should point out. And, of course, right behind this comes the New Hampshire race. Those who are trying to bring him down, in particular Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis, are extremely concerned as to how well they can show. Haley the other day declared that it's just between you and me. Speaking, reference Trump. She didn't want to even acknowledge DeSantis anymore. Now, that's her position, and she's entitled to it. But is she going to get the support that she needs out of it? When you look at some of the numbers that have been coming out, there's nothing that shows that either she nor DeSantis will get anywhere near what Donald Trump is going to have. And I'm looking at a piece I want to share with you. It took me for a moment to find it. Brett Stevens is a New York columnist. And even he admits Trump would be a strong candidate in the 2024 election because he got the big issues right in 2016. That's a pretty amazing statement. I'll come back to it in a moment, but first let me set the stage for you. Here we are, January 15, 2024, the second hour of 2 hours of Larry Connors, USA, back-to-back, reminding you when we're on the air, we are also streaming video for you. You can find it at Larry Connors USA, Facebook, Twitter, Rumble, or you can go to News Talk STL, Facebook, Rumble, Twitter. You can also find it at Larry Connors USA, Facebook. I know a lot of folks have said, you know, you're spread so far, I see big numbers, and I don't see big numbers, but I look at another one, I see big numbers there. Look, I don't care how you want to watch or listen. We appreciate it either way. And what you're doing is help build this audience, not just in an organic sense, but even almost viral as you begin to share with others. I certainly encourage you to do that. All right, so I want to go back to this article from Brett Stevens, New York Times. They call him the foremost never-Trumper. There was a January 11 article that posted under the headline, and I had not seen this until now. The case for Trump by someone who wants him to lose. That says a lot, right? So Brett Stevens wrote, "You can't defeat an opponent if you refuse to understand what makes him formidable, and to many people, especially progressives, fail to think deeply about the enduring sources of Trump's appeal. One of the issues being immigration." And on that, Brett Stevens wrote, "Arguably, the single most important geopolitical fact of the century is the mass migration of people from the South to the North and east to the west, causing tectonic demographic, cultural, economic, ultimately political shifts. Trump understood this from the start of his presidency in 2015. That's Brett Stevens stating that. He went on to say it said something about the self-deluded state of Western politics when Trump came on the scene, that his assertion of the obvious was treated as a moral scandal, at least by the stratum of society that had the least to lose from mass migration. To millions of other Americans, his message, however crudely he may have expressed it, sounded like plain common sense. And it is. Enforcing the border, Stevens wrote, whether through a wall, a fence, or some other mechanism. And what he says in these next few words, again, this is one of those cases I remind you, if you're driving, keep control of your vehicle, because as soon as I say this, and this is from a New York Times columnist that bills himself as a never-Trumper, hates Trump, does not want to see him win, but acknowledges the writing on the wall, and in this part he acknowledges this. He said, enforcing control at the border, whether through a wall, a fence, or some other mechanism, isn't racism. Isn't racism. It's a basic requirement of statehood and peoplehood, which any nation has an obligation to protect and cherish. Those are strong words. Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan has been right with Trump. He's up in Iowa as well, doing what he can to bring more support in. He says we have to return Donald Trump to the White House.
That's the guy we need back in there. I said today at the rally, I said, you know, think of the comparison in 4 years. We literally went from a secure border to no border. We went from safe streets to record levels of crime. We went from $2 gas to $3, $4, $5 gas. And maybe most importantly, we went from stable prices to record inflation. And I haven't even gotten into foreign policy, where we had in President Trump someone who projected strength and was respected around the world to Joe Biden and Russia in Ukraine, Hamas and Hezbollah attacking our best friend, the state of Israel, and of course what China's, I mean, so that is what this is about. Elections are about a contrast and a comparison and about which side you're going to be. I think it's clear President Trump is the right guy for the job because he did such a great job when he was there before.
Again, that's Congressman Jim Jordan. Well, Larry, I'd expect that from a Republican to say that. Not all Republicans do, though. They're still looking for some breaks in the armor. Chinks in the armor, if you want to use that phrase. I know someone going to say, oh, that's slanderous. That's not really politically correct. Well, call it what you want. It's an opening in the armor. And they think there's still some way to get to him. Nikki Haley, of course, was appointed by Trump to serve as our U.N. ambassador. I've said it before, and I'll state it again. I think she did a good job. Trump liked it at that time, but he has since soured on it. And I don't know if he had wrapped the politics into it or not, but now he's saying she wasn't as tough as she could have been. Well, she was your ambassador to the UN. If you didn't think she was tough enough, you should have told her to get tougher in this area and this area. And even then, I think she was tough without direction from the White House. But now she's facing off against Trump. And Trump is mocking her and saying, oh, Nikki said never, never. Well, that changed.
I will never run against him, ever. She said this for years. Then she calls a news conference. Ladies and gentlemen, I've decided to run for president. I said, that's not so surprising because I understand Nikki. She can't help herself. I understand her very well, better than anybody. By the way, she's not up to the job, okay? I can tell you that. I don't want to be mean. If I said that about a man, everyone would say, what a great statement. But I'll tell you about from Ron's standpoint, he's definitely not up to the job. I know him very well. I got him elected. He forgot about that. He forgot that he was a three. He was dead, gone. He forgot that he came to me, tears in his eyes, begging for an endorsement, and I endorsed him.
Yeah, I don't know about the tears in the eyes, but the way Trump describes it, and we do know it's correct, he got DeSantis, went to Trump, said, I need help here in Florida. Trump stepped up and gave him his endorsement, his blessing, and he ends up winning. And, of course, now he also is against Trump. Now, keep in mind, both Nikki Haley and Trump, and even Vivek Ramaswamy have said, Trump was a right guy for that time, but we're past that time. Well, they're correct, we're past that time, but we're in more dire straits now than we were when he first went into office. And that is mainly because the Biden administration, its stand on terrorism, just now beginning to recognize that the Houthi rebels are a terrorist organization, even though the Biden administration removed them from the terrorist watch list right after he got in office, and that they're recognizing this mass illegal immigration into our country is destroying our country, eating us from the inside out at this point. And we're not seeing anything from this government that shows they're going to really do anything. Now, Jim Jordan, of course, is very close to Trump. And despite all the numbers, the stats, not only reference the Iowa caucus, New Hampshire, the overall general election, Congressman Jim Jordan is willing to place money on the line.
President Trump's going to win. I think he's going to win big. And I think, as he said at the rally today, this is not only going to send a message for New Hampshire and South Carolina, but I think a message for the whole country. I think he's going to be our nominee. More importantly, I think President Trump's going to be the next president. I leave that up to Ron DeSantis. He's a good man. I served with him in Congress when we formed the Freedom Caucus. There were nine of us, and he was part of the original nine. So I have nothing against him. I just know the right guy for the job is President Trump. And that's why I've been 110% behind him from the get-go.
And he has. The question has to be asked of anyone voting for Biden that says they're going to vote for Biden. Ask them, what has he accomplished? What has he accomplished? Bidenomics, really? Is that the accomplishment that makes things better for you and your family? I don't think so. They're still trying to prop it up. And, of course, you got all the other issues. And then, as we were saying earlier, then there is the border issue.
They don't want a solution. If they think that these people were coming here to vote for Republicans, then they'd all of a sudden have a solution. But they want to literally confound the way we vote. They want to give power to people who are low-skilled workers, who are going to be reliant on the government. That's going to make them lean to the left because they absolutely believe that the government is the solution to everyone's troubles. And they want a voter constituency here that will vote for people who believe in government rather than in individual accomplishments. And I'm not saying that you can't come from nothing to everything in the United States. That's what we're all about. But we have to know who's coming here. We have to know what rate. We have to set it appropriate to what we can support and on our terms, our legal terms. We already have laws. Obama was famous for quoting to say that we are a nation of laws, and that's why he kept our sovereign brothers. That's why he deported people, that he followed the law. They're the same laws that exist today. All Biden has to do is actually support the laws that already exist. You don't have to make new ones. And we have H.R. 2 on his desk anyway. If the Senate would ever get him and do their job, we don't need to compromise more. Just do the laws that we already have, and we'd be fine.
We would be fine. At least we'd be better off if we simply hold to the laws we have right now. But one law has to still be put back into effect. The first one that Biden canceled when he went into office, stay in Mexico. The remain in Mexico policy meant you could not come across the border if you're claiming asylum until we adjudicated. Already 12, 13, 14, 15 million that we know of have come across the border. And even Mayorkas himself the other day said it could take up to 6 years to get some of these cases heard. It's going to be longer than 6 years. Don't let them tell you they can do it in 6 years. And, of course, they say they want more money so they can put judges on the border. No, they want to put more Border Patrol agents down there to process it quicker. And the judges they would put on the border would simply rubber stamp everybody coming through. There is no vetting process at the border. Which leads us to the recent for an impeachment inquiry and hearing against Mayorkas, Florida Congresswoman Laurel Lee.
Much has been said today by our colleagues across the aisle about this hearing and the purposes for it. It's been called a waste of time. It's been called a charade. It's been suggested that it's repetitive or unnecessary. To suggest that this hearing is any of those things, or to suggest that this hearing is tantamount to nothing more than a discussion of policy differences, is to fundamentally deny the seriousness, the scope, the scale of the catastrophe at our southern border. And the testimony of these witnesses who are here today, and every witness that has come before them to testify in front of this committee about the seriousness of this crisis. We are here today because Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas has intentionally gone around and subverted the immigration laws of the United States of America.
And that is very clear and evident. You don't have to be a legal scholar to know he is failing in his first and only prime obligation, taking an oath to protect this nation from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And he's letting unvetted illegals into the country as part of a campaign that they believe, actually, as you were hearing Congressman McCormick say, they believe they're all going to vote for them. I wouldn't be so sure of that, but I will tell you this. The vast numbers coming across, and this is a warning shot to black voters, you're no longer going to be a prized possession for Democrats. Many have already walked away from the Democrats because they've said, what have they done for us? And they can think for themselves. They don't need to be told how to think. But they're still being basically courted as a big block of votes that stands together. That's falling apart, and now that more illegals coming in, it's going to decimate the black numbers and their control. Congressman Lee of Florida says more charges are needed.
We are here today because Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas has repeatedly defied orders from courts directing him to cease and desist certain policies, which he continues to utilize. We are here today because the Department of Homeland Security has defied inquiries from Congress trying to get to the bottom of the scope and the scale of this crisis. And we are here today because Secretary Mayorkas has defied congressional directives related to spending, congressional directives as to how money was supposed to be spent. We are here because there is an unchecked flood of illegal immigration at our southern border that is destroying not just border communities, but communities around our country. Today alone, we have heard extraordinary and compelling testimony about the utter lawlessness that is occurring in this administration. Attorney General Knudsen shared with us that he perceives a refusal to faithfully execute the laws of the United States, and shared stories from his state about human trafficking and fentanyl trafficking and the devastation that has occurred because of our wide open southern border.
Coming up before this hour is over, the FAA is working to embrace DEI. Is that going to make your flights safer or less safe? And then Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis talks about saying, I've been misplayed. And she says it in church, lock and load, ready on the floor.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
It's been a very busy year for Wellington Environmental. Tom and his staff had traveled all over making sure that minor issues don't become major disasters. Then there are the times Wellington is called in for emergencies, but nothing Wellington hasn't seen before. They have certified inspectors, chemists, scientists, environmental planners, and that's just some of their expertise. That is why the St. Louis Business Journal gave Wellington such a high ranking. So what will 2024 bring? No one knows, but if you take time to visit the Wellington Environmental Facebook, you're going to see things that might explain health issues at your home or business affecting you, your family, clients. Wellington Environmental Facebook. Tom Wellington and the entire staff wish you a blessed 2024. Your world cleaner, better, safer. So As always, be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
No, you guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local and global.
People, this is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local, really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9/94.1
and News Talk STL.
As a truck driver, I've learned how important road safety is. I know that large trucks need more time and room to stop. That's why I always hang back and follow other vehicles at a safe distance. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, try to remember to always give trucks extra space when you merge in front of them. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Ackerman Toyota had a great 2023, so Jay asked me to thank you for all of your support. Loyal customers making Ackerman Toyota number one in St. Louis Toyota sales. Number one out of the 75 Toyota dealers in the region in Camry and Corolla sales. Ackerman has the lowest prices, great selection. Visit Ackerman at Hampton and 44 or online, AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota, for life.
This is News Talk STL.
You should have closed your windows and got another dog. You should have chained up all the doors and switched up all the locks. And how many times
is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. Earlier this week, the Texas National Guard soldiers, on the order of the governor of Texas, took control of a public park in Eagle Pass, where the Border Patrol had been using the park to hold migrants. That immediately sparked a new battle between President Biden and Governor Abbott over U.S. border policy. My next guest has a lot of experience at the border, been down there numerous times. I want his take on some of this latest flurry of activity. John Daniel Davidson, Federalist Senior Editor. John, welcome aboard.
Hey, thanks for having me, Larry.
So I know you've been watching the Eagle Pass situation, and here we have a case where, again, the U.S. government is not enforcing our border. Texas says, if you're not going to, we will.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's sort of a conflict that's been brewing for years now, ever since Biden took office and reversed a lot of the Trump administration policies that had been keeping the border under control. We've seen just insane numbers of illegal crossings over the past year. In December alone, over 300,000 arrests at the border. We've never had anything close to that before. And December isn't usually even a busy month at the border. And so what we've seen from Texas Governor Greg Abbott is a slow but methodical escalation in the conflict between state sovereignty and federal sovereignty. And specifically in the case of Eagle Pass, the area that the Texas National Guard has taken control of is a municipal park that the city of Eagle Pass had been allowing federal authorities to use as a staging ground for processing illegal immigrants. What Texas did is, by virtue of the Texas Constitution, all municipal local governments exist at the pleasure of the state government, and the governor, with supreme executive authority, has the power to overrule municipal authorities. They just went in and said, we're going to control this area now, and no one, municipal authorities, federal authorities, is allowed in, because in their view, the feds were using that area as basically a welcome mat for illegal immigrants. That's the kernel of the discussion.
Let me dive into that one remark you made. I want to make sure, because I've seen it reported this way. The Texas border right now, I should say the National Guard, is not allowing federal agents into that area of Texas. Is that correct?
That's right. They've taken operational control of this municipal park, which is a very large riverfront park on the Rio Grande. That's a hot spot for crossings. Now, the catch is that when illegal immigrants do cross in this area and get up on the north shore of the Rio Grande, Texas law enforcement are turning those people over to Border Patrol for processing. So it's not as though Texas law enforcement are actually expelling people to the south bank of the Rio Grande back to Mexico. We haven't got there yet, but it is a significant escalation for Texas law enforcement to deny access to this park to the federal authorities.
So what is the value of that other than headline grabbing?
Well, I have criticized many times Governor Greg Abbott for engaging what I call border security theater. That is mostly what Operation Lone Star has been since the beginning. I went down numerous times and looked at their operations up close, talked to the Texas National Guard and Texas Department of Military and Texas Rangers who were conducting those operations. And for several years now, I would characterize it as a lot of expense and a lot of effort for not a lot of results. It's theater. And it serves a political purpose for the governor, but it doesn't actually affect the numbers of illegal immigrants. I and others have argued that the governor could do something, but it would provoke a constitutional crisis. And I think maybe that's the direction we're headed at this point.
Well, I have to ask, I mean, what we have right now appears to be a constitutional crisis. I mean,
yes.
the border is supposedly under the U.S. Constitution control, and that is not something left unregulated, and it falls back to the states.
That's right. Texas Governor Abbott and others have argued that what's happening at the border now as a result of the federal authorities' dereliction of duty amounts to an invasion. And under the Constitution, states have the right to exercise what might otherwise be considered foreign policy actions that are reserved to the federal government in cases of invasion. Now, Abbott has called the southern border immigration crisis an invasion, and he has invoked that part of the Constitution. He has not yet taken the next step, which is to order Texas Rangers and Texas DPS to actually deport foreign nationals over the Rio Grande. And I think that's coming. It's sort of inevitable at this point.
So they're using I've seen the Border Patrol using shields to stop some people as they begin to come up to one of the other parts of the park you talked about. But they're just taking them into custody and turning them back over to the feds. So they were going passing through anyway.
Essentially, yes. We've seen other actions that Texas has taken, like putting floating barriers right. And razor wire to try to deter people from high traffic areas. But ultimately, to me, the real hinge on which all of this policy turns is when will states, and specifically Texas, because that's where the vast majority of illegal crossings are happening, when will they take the final step and say, we are actually going to physically take illegal immigrants that we have observed illegally entering Texas, put them on boats or put them on buses and drive them to the south bank of the Rio Grande and order them to get out. Until you do that, you are not really provoking the kind of crisis that we need to settle this question, because it is a real constitutional question. What are states supposed to do when the federal government refuses to enforce federal border law?
So
that's the question.
So when the state legislature did pass a bill, which Governor Abbott signed, that said they could arrest illegals, probably give them a misdemeanor and send them back. And if they came in again, caught them again, there would be a felony. They could imprison them or deport.
Right. So it's important to understand that this latest action in Eagle Pass is not being done under the authority of that law. This is being done under the existing authority of the governor over municipal government.
Okay.
It's part of Operation Lone Star. He's simply ordering Texas DPS and Texas Department of the Military to take over this park. And it's a jurisdictional exercise of authority. It's not being done under that new law. Now that new law is again another incremental step. Abbott is very cautious. He has always been very cautious. And he's always been very slow to kind of come around to the necessary thing. I think he's getting there, but he has some really bad advisors who are always worried about political optics and not really understanding what is broadly popular in Texas and across the country when it comes to the border is decisive action.
You know, I've got a piece I want to share with you that deals specifically with that point. But before we do, there are other states you could cross without going across the Rio Grande and get into the U.S., California, Arizona, New Mexico, if you're going to go into Texas, though, you've got to go across the Rio Grande. So the buoys, yeah. The buoys were one option. The razor wire, it wasn't going to hurt the Border Patrol agents. They're not trying to climb over it. It's just right there at the edge. But what you said then about it, they seem to be worried about the optics. I'm reading a piece from New York Times reporter Brett Stevens, considered a, quote, foremost never-Trumper. And he wrote that, and I'm sure you saw it, but I want to repeat it for the audience that didn't. He's talking about, he said, enforcing control at the border, whether through a wall, a fence, or some other mechanism, isn't racism. It's a basic requirement of statehood and peoplehood, which any nation has an obligation to protect and cherish.
That's right. Yeah, and, you know, that's true as far as it goes. And I think Democrats used to pay lip service to that, and they used to talk about how we need to secure the border. If you recall, even Obama used to talk that way.
Right.
And Chuck Schumer used to talk that way. Joe Biden used to talk that way.
So did Clinton. 90s. Yes, all of them.
And so did Clinton. And now we've sort of passed into a new rhetorical era with the left kind of taking over the Democratic Party. They don't actually believe in borders anymore. You recall Hillary Clinton in the 2016 campaign gave that speech to a bunch of international bankers talking about a world of open markets and open borders.
Right.
That's what they want. And they've decided to kind of drop the pretense that we need a border at all. You heard just last week, Jerry Nadler talking from his dais in the House of Representatives about how, you know, if we didn't have illegal immigrants picking our vegetables would rot in the field.
Yeah.
And so you have Democrats kind of talk about illegal immigrants the way they used to talk about slaves.
About slaves, yeah. I remember Florida Congresswoman way back then, before we got into the Biden years, saying, well, we don't have illegals. Who's going to make the beds in our hotels? I mean, you're right. Yeah. That's exactly what they were saying. Now,
and
go ahead.
And that's how they view the issue. And that now they're just now coming around to just sort of saying what they actually think. So they don't really want to enforce the border or impose. And this is the key point. They don't want to impose any border deterrence. And that's what the Trump administration did. When you deport people, it's a powerful deterrent to people in the sending countries who have to spend a lot of money and risk personal, their personal life and limb and fortunes and families in order to get here. They don't think that they're going to be able to get in. They won't come. And that's the one thing the Biden administration has refused to do or even talk about.
Well, Alejandro Mayorkas did acknowledge it to an extent. He said it's the pull factor that has them come. Well, if you shut the damn border, there won't be a pull factor. And then to that extent,
right.
Very quickly, the sanctuary cities, when Trump was talking about cutting off federal dollars for them, and their reaction was, that's racist. And now that many of them don't want to be sanctuary cities. Last 30 seconds for you, sir.
It's really simple. The border is a complex place, but the policy piece is really simple. We could have secured the border at any point over the past 20 years. Joe Biden could do it in a matter of minutes with a change in policy. It's deterrence and deportation. Those are the only things that will ultimately secure the border. And if the federal government refuses to do it, the states have to step up. And that's what we're starting to see from Texas. And I hope Greg Abbott takes the next step and actually orders deportation of illegals.
Very quick, yes or no. Do you think Biden will suddenly decide, okay, let's close it right before the election, maybe get some more votes?
Absolutely not. He's enthralled to the left wing of his party.
Thank you very much, John Daniel Davidson, senior editor of the Federalist. As always, I appreciate
your
time. You bet. Coming up, so Fannie Willis claims I've been framed somewhat.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I'm always glad to have new sponsors, but I have turned some down. See, I only endorse clients if I believe in them. And I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. Through those years, listeners said they went with John Beal because they trusted me. And just recently, a woman named Mary wrote, "We got a John Beal roof based on your recommendation." Thank you, Mary, and all the others for calling John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Sometimes you want to do something extra special for someone. Vincent's Jewelers can help you. Maybe you want to do something for yourself. Mark a date, something you accomplished. It doesn't have to be anything really expensive, but it has to mean something now and for the future. Vincent's, locally owned, just asked for the chance to work with you, as they have with me. On Olive, just east of 270. Every day, new specials at vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
One of the five most traumatic experiences in life is moving. I can assure you that McGuire Moving can help ease that pressure. Moving into a new home or a new business, locally, internationally, McGuire is rated number one. More than 80 years of experience. Free estimate, call McGuire, 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
God, you never told me that on Christmas night 2023 that I would get an emergency call from Capers Green, my chief of investigations. The police are surrounding your house. A man has called 911 and he said he shot a woman in the head. I am headed there. You never told me the pure, unimaginable fear as I believe my oldest child was dead in my home. I cannot describe, God, for you the panic and the terror and the fear I had believing my child was no longer with me. I thank you, Lord, that it all turned out to be a cruel hoax and just another day to steal my joy as I tried to celebrate you.
That is Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, apparently also talking about a swatting incident that might have been carried out against her home or something. She was speaking this last Sunday in a sermon at the Big Bethel AME Church, but what she was really doing was trying to make her case as to why I've done nothing wrong in the investigation of Donald Trump, and the issue has come up that she hired a special prosecutor, which she decided to do on her own, and she and her prosecutor have not disputed any of the allegations. A spokesperson for her office said to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution she would respond in court filings. Well, the allegations coming from a co-defendant of Trump in the Georgia election case says not only did she hire this guy, but she was paying him money, which then he would turn around and use to take her on lavish vacation trips. $600,000+. And the timing of that and the fact that she was getting federal dollars from the DOJ suggests those were the federal funds Willis was using to finance the prosecution of Donald Trump and maybe pay her paramour, who in turn would reward her with trips to the Caribbean, wherever you want to go on a sailing trip. let's go. She thought it would just be ignored. And, of course, now that's been exposed, she went to the AME church claiming basically they're playing a race card against me.
Dear God, are you listening? Why does Commissioner Thorne and so many others question my decision in a special counsel? Lord, your flawed, hard-headed, and imperfect child, I'm a little confused. I appointed three special counsel, as is my right to do, paid them all the same hourly rate. They only attacked one. I hired one white woman, a good personal friend and great lawyer. A superstar, I tell you. I hired one white man, brilliant, my friend, and a great lawyer. And I hired one black man, another superstar, a great friend, and a great lawyer. Oh, Lord, they gonna be mad when I call them out on this nonsense. First thing they say, oh, she gonna play the race card now. But no, God, isn't it them who's playing the race card when they only question one? Isn't it them playing the race card when they constantly think, I need someone from some other jurisdiction in some other state to tell me how to do a job I've been doing almost 30 years?
She's getting, obviously, a great reception. Not just because it's a black church, but she's appealing to some things that they want to hear. And she's correct on the facts that she's hired a couple of white people as well. But this one black man she hired that's a superstar, as she described him, is the one who's been as an investigator hired by her without any other one's authority. And she's writing the checks and clearing them without anyone else being involved to him to the tune of $600,000+. And then he is the one who just happens to take her on some of these lavish cruise trips. All this came about because of one of the co-defendants of Trump in the Georgia election case said, you got to look at the facts of what this woman is doing and how she's doing it. This is Nathan Wade. It was the lead prosecutor in the Trump case. And according to Mike Ronan, the co-defendant with Trump, said Wade has had, quote, an improper relationship with Willis. His firm paid by the county to take Willis on luxury vacations by using potentially fraudulent payments. He was appointed without the required approval of authorities, has little to no experience in prosecuting, and he did meet twice with President Joe Biden's White House counsel before indicting Trump in August. That calls into question if the White House was coordinating prosecuting Biden's 2024 political opponent. The district attorney did acknowledge one thing, which we all have to, saying I'm imperfect and I'm a flawed person, but I did no wrong. It reeks and stinks of wrong. If you're the county prosecutor and you're hiring someone to carry out an investigation of basically a political enemy, Donald Trump, and you are paying this person directly the kind of money she's been paying, and then he in turn lavishes gifts and trips on her. That is a classic kickback. She can go to the church every day for the rest of her days and make those statements. They will not hold up in court. The FAA is working to hire more people with psychiatric problems. This is all on a diversity and inclusion webpage at the FAA, the agency claiming diversity is integral to achieving the FAA's mission of ensuring safe and efficient travel across our nation and beyond, adding diversity is critical. Where in the hell does it say DEI has anything to do with safety. Nowhere. Diversion, equity, inclusion. I don't hear the S word, safety, anywhere in there. So they are now pushing forward with this people with disabilities, offering those individuals equal job opportunities. Now, it depends on what their job's going to be in the FAA. If they're just shuffling through papers, making sure they're in the right stack or something, I'm not dismissing the ability of people that are challenged to do something. But when it comes to public safety, you want the best. It's the same as a doctor. I mean, when the medical profession starts deciding, you know what? You're not covered by anyone else with DEI, so we'll make you a doctor. You'll be our first doctor, our first transgender doctor that can't hear, can't see, missing extremities, and so forth. Well, I wish them well, but more importantly, I wish the patient well. Targeted disabilities from the federal government as a matter of policy include hearing, vision, missing extremities, partial paralysis, complete paralysis, epilepsy, severe intellectual disability, psychiatric disability, and dwarfism. Yeah, that's the way it's worded, dwarfism. In reference to DEI webpage, the agency quotes our great Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, and he writes, and I'm quoting, at its best, transportation can be a powerful engine of opportunity connecting people to jobs, education, and resources, whether they live in a big city, a rural community, or anywhere in between. Ensuring equity and accessibility for every member of the traveling public is one of the highest department's priorities of the Department of Transportation. Look, I have no problem with saying we're not going to deny someone a right to be on a plane if they have any of these issues. But they should not be in a position inside the FAA where they could be altering and changing things that might end up being detrimental. Common sense is lost. My dad used to beat on, I don't mean beat physically, but I mean mentally, that, boy, you better get some horse sense. You're going to find out the hard way in life. And by that he meant, don't spit against the wind, right? Don't step on Superman's cape. And don't get in a fight with a junkyard dog. I mean, there are things like that you realize, yeah, that would not be a good idea. Some people have to learn it the hard way. This is, of course, Martin Luther King Day as being honored across the nation. Some places are closed, some are not. Some are giving employees an option. And even when they're given the option, some are still working. But I want to take us back to one of the most memorable speeches, at least a section of it, August 1963.
My poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racist, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today.
That was Martin Luther King, and it was I Have a Dream, obviously. And what we need in this day and age is his dream carried to fruition. 1963, Look how far we are from then. And yet what we have now is DEI. Not I have a dream where we want to be judged on their ability. Not the color of their skin, and not simply because they are different, but their ability. I wouldn't even begin to put in what Martin Luther King might think about today's events, but I do know this. I'm looking at a piece that I agree with, written by Kendall Qualls in The Federalist, saying leftists hate MLK because they care more about color of skin than content of character. I think that's probably true nowadays. The leftists, the ones who should be most supporting MLK, probably the ones who are out there celebrating the day or at least taking the time off and going doing shopping or whatever they want to do. It's their choice. They can do what they want. But they took it all to honor Martin Luther King and they're not taking part in any events. Where's the honor? This article in Federalist says, keep in mind, many on the left never agreed with MLK's nonviolent protest in the 60s. It brings up Stokely Carmichael, the originator of the black nationalist movement, Black Power, and the Black Panthers, and he stated at one time, when you talk of black power, you talk of building a movement that will smash everything Western civilization has created. And many followers of his movement enrolled in colleges in the 70s. They earned doctoral degrees in African studies. They now lead or have major influence in local, state, federal agencies, academia, the arts, and media. But there are many others that were also black, and they may or may not have gone to some of those colleges, but they came out with an understanding, what can you do? What can you actually do? We're not going to put you on the football team just because you're a particular color, nor are we going to keep you off. We're going to put you on there if you're going to achieve what we need. If not, you're benched. We'll put someone else in. Many people would use the phrase, I don't see color, to conform that they buy in of the vision that we are going to judge people by the color of the skin. Again, this is from the Federalist article. And they said, in fact, based on a Gallup poll, nearly 70% of Americans, black and white, rated race relations either good or very good back in 2002. And then they note, ironically, it was in the first black president's second term when race relations worsened. Now less than 44% of Americans rate race relations as good or very good. What changed? Well, new people, new blood, different circumstances. Obviously, cases where police went beyond their authority and where young hoodlums thought they could terrorize the community, no one was going to be held accountable. And other people who just moved out, left it to whoever was left behind. And others who actually wanted to continue to make a difference. And they would recite the mantra from Martin Luther King. There's one other statement he did not make in that speech I want to share with you. This should stick with you. He said, I have decided to stick to love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.